Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Dia Dynasty, can you describe our surroundings to the listeners?
Tina, welcome to my magic yurt, where only the few are privileged enough to enter or even see it.
Oof, I feel very privileged.
Because when you walked in, the door, you didn't see it.
I knew it was there, though.
Yes.
I was basically like, my eyes were darting around being like, so where's this yurt? But it's magic, so it could be like, you look somewhere, and then you look away, and then you look back, and the yurt is there.
Absolutely.
It's kind of what I was expecting.
Yes. Or when you go into the bathroom, and then you open the medicine cabinet, and you have to crawl through, you know, the medicine cabinet.
Exactly. Exactly.
So this is a, technically a British camp tent.
Wow.
That has a pole in the middle holding it up.
This probably wouldn't actually, like, work as a stripper pole.
No, definitely not. The tent would come crashing down and you would be a big ghost struggling. The pole is wrapped in Christmas lights.
Mm-hmm.
And inside I have rugs layered on top of rugs, as well as textiles of many different plushes and textures.
Mm-hmm.
Tina is sitting on a low chair that could easily be sleepable.
I love a low chair. I loved what you were just saying about how you feel. What did you say about being on the ground?
It's where I feel the most held.
Mm.
And being able to sprawl out is really important to me.
Cool.
And so this is where I sprawl out. This is where I have a futon where I can even fold it out to sleep in. In fact, I sleep in here quite a bit, especially when I'm mad at my partner. Because this is where I come.
So this is like your doghouse that you've made for yourself.
This is my doghouse, and I will willingly go to my own doghouse.
Or you make the rest of the world the doghouse, and this is like the out. When you're in here, you're on the outside of the doghouse.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I'm hidden and protected.
Mm-hmm.
It's very warm in here.
Yeah, it is.
It can be. I have my altar, and it's full of magical items, my crystals and singing bowl and a ram skull and sage.
Is that some sort of a dagger? Are there some daggers?
Yes, it is a dagger. There's two of them.
I like them.
I'm not sure of the origin of the dagger. There's a lingam stone.
Cool.
And a wand. I've got some shaman aura spray.
Nice.
In case you're feeling like you want to shamanize yourself a little bit more. So yeah.
Who doesn't? Well, I do truly feel honored and held very magically being in your yurt. So thank you for hosting.
My pleasure.
So we, I guess, have only known each other for a little bit. I guess I found out about La Maison de Rouge and then met you and your partner, Lucy, who has been on the podcast before, Lucy Sweetkill. And so you are a dominatrix.
Yes, I am.
And you and Lucy started La Maison de Rouge as a sort of center of community building and education for pro-doms in New York City and beyond. Is that accurate? Or
I think that's the latest iteration of our brand. We originally started as a brand of lifestyle and perhaps more intersectional in in concepts of feminism and race.
Yeah.
And also wanting to elevate ourselves in a way that could be not seen as sensationalized or these raunchy, you know, sex working deviants. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but also wanting to bring BDSM up a level and be seen as something more therapeutic and healing, as well as culturally relevant. So it's basically a space that is being held for all kinds of possibilities. And specifically right now, it is a physical space, as well as Lucy's interest in social activism and my interest in healing, and where those passions come together.
Cool. Those, I also am interested in all of those things, and I'm really interested in the way that you two are doing it. And I am really glad to know you. Also, every time I get together with you, there's always the best snacks. I just really feel like the dominatrix snack game is very strong.
Snacks are very important to Lucy. And I just like to eat. I'll eat whatever is put in front of me.
Nice.
So it's a good combination. And we like to have, you know, sharing. And I think that gathering around a meal or some, you know, kind of food is also very, it's a bonding experience.
Yeah.
To literally break bread.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And like salami and like nice cheeses and cupcakes.
And break meat.
And rosé and all kinds of things. So yeah. Okay. So that's La Maison de Rouge, and folks can check that out online. And are there, and I also, in the time that I've known you, have definitely gotten the impression that you are somebody who is interested in BDSM sort of in conversation with a lot of other, as you've mentioned, healing and even mystic arts or practices.
Absolutely.
Do you want to talk a little bit about your interest in those other things and how they're connected to kink?
Yeah, I think that kink is inherently play.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of embracing curiosity and mixing that with, you know, a sense of sexuality that is less traditional, so it's not always prescribed what is going to happen. And in fact, a lot of times it's being comfortable with the unknown, or being excited and thrilled by the unknown.
Mm-hmm.
And so the unknown is a place where so many things can pop up.
Like literally anything, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And as a professional, I like to be able to hold a space where that kind of thing happens or is allowed to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so within that space of the unknown, there's kink, there's sexuality, but there's also the discovery of something that can be very therapeutic and healing, which has come up so often that it's really difficult to ignore and deny.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've started to embrace more techniques and modalities of bringing about these more kind of therapeutic and cathartic effects. And I find that inherently BDSM and kink are a way to also embrace a lot of these therapeutic and cathartic effects on the journey.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So for example, something like rope bondage is, there's this intimacy, and there's this rope in between the two of you that is an extension of the emotions and the closeness. But then when you've brought somebody into a rope space and they're tightly held by it, that in and of itself is a hypnotic induction.
Mm.
And so you've brought this person into a trance state where they can be easily manipulated. You know, and if you were inclined to manipulate somebody in that way, it would be almost too easy. But also being open to suggestion of ideas of what it is to let go, how that can be integrated into a non-kink environment as well, like remembering what it feels like and then allowing yourself to let go and flow with whatever situation that may bring you anxiety outside of kink. So the integration of certain suggestions and ideas that can be very therapeutic is definitely one of my major areas of interest. And then, of course, with these different techniques, there's always an element of mysticism where you don't exactly know what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't always explain it or repeat it.
Because
it's it's a unique moment that will never happen again. And so being present is really important.
Wow, that's really interesting and beautiful. I mean, I like the idea of something I've been thinking a lot lately, partially because of our mutual friend Yin, is the idea of ritual and how, I guess the way I've been thinking about it is sort of like using ritual to harness or yoke those experiences. Like you like go into the unknown and you have an experience and you can't quite explain it, and maybe you're comfortable with being a dreamer and never being able to fully explain it, or you're like comfortable with the, you're at peace with the knowledge that you won't ever really understand it, but maybe you want to feel that sensation again. Maybe you want to feel, to get back to that emotional place again. Maybe you want to know how to bring other people into those spaces, and you don't necessarily always know that the ritual, there's no guarantee that the ritual is going to work.
Not always. I think that that element of unknowing is actually kind of exciting, but also that element of unknowing is held within a place of predictability where you enter into the ritual and you know exactly what contains it. And so it's like within that safe space, you can allow so much to happen, and it may be different every single time, but the induction of that safe space of perhaps whatever protocol or opening of that ritual is predictable. And so you know that you're engaging your subconscious in a place that allows for it to just kind of like open up and be vulnerable. And because it's not necessarily formulaic within that space, but there is a formula to getting that to that space. I think that that kind of ability to let go is contained, and so you feel that safety of being of knowing that this, you know, this unknown will come to an end at some point.
You have your breadcrumb trail back, or the person that you trust to guide you back.
Yes.
And maybe the person also to trust to give you guidance and how to reintegrate
totally
into everyday life,
which is a huge part of what I think the healing aspect of BDSM has to entail is the integration, aka the aftercare.
Yeah.
And the processing.
But also playing is really fun.
Yeah.
Like you brought up play, and I think we're gonna talk about that a lot tonight.
Play?
Play.
Play.
Yeah.
We absolutely should.
Yeah.
And I think that I know where you're going next with it.
Yeah, so okay. On the topic of play, oh yeah, Dia's cat is for sure laying on my notes, but that's fine. she's testing me. So there's something that, wait, no. Before we segue into the topic, I did want to say that you mentioned hypnotic induction, and I did just want to like underscore the fact that you did just show me your fancy, very official looking certificate of leveling up as a practitioner of hypnosis.
Yes.
What is the level that you're at now?
I am at the master practitioner level.
Cool.
And I think that sounds a lot more advanced than it really is. But the practice that I've been doing through the instructional course has been life-changing.
Cool.
And so transformative. And being able to tap into our own unconscious, I think, is one of the most powerful gifts that anybody could give you.
Cool.
A lot of times it doesn't happen in our daily lives, but hypnosis presupposes that this is always accessible to us, sometimes with a guide, sometimes not with a guide, but that trance state is a naturally occurring phenomenon that we kind of flit in and out of daily, several times a day.
That makes sense to me.
Yeah. And just having deja vu right now. So we're on the right track.
Cool.
So, so hypnosis is just a singular technique out of many to bring you into the trance state where you're more receptive, you're more open, you're more curious about what's really going on below.
That sounds like a place I would like to be on, like, a Sunday afternoon.
Yeah.
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 Cool. And you also are studying Reiki. Can we talk about that?
I've actually studied Reiki, and I'm at the second level, practitioner level. But I also feel like I maybe wasn't in a place to fully receive the instruction that I received whenever I received it. So I'm going back to Reiki 1 with a different teacher.
Cool.
And so Reiki is a system of healing that works with the chakras, which are the energy centers in all along your, let's say, spinal column and beyond. And it's a form of healing and energy manipulation. And I don't mean manipulation in a
Machiavellian way.
Right.
Yeah. No, manipulate, like, it's a craft, and the energy is like a material that you're using.
Correct. Usually for the purpose of healing, more specifically for opening up certain energy centers that may be blocked, or helping to modulate some of them that are a little too open. And each energy center correlates with both a stage in life as well as
don't they correspond to, like, colors, and each one has, like, a musical note?
Correct. Or a tone.
Right.
As well as certain areas of life that also correspond with body organs. So the energy body is very impressionable and can store, like, traumas and emotions,
which
subsequently are stored in your physical body, which have the potential to cause disease.
All kinds of disease.
All kinds of disease. You make it sound so sexy, Tina.
Reiki?
No, all kinds of disease.
I can make anything sound sexy to you.
That is quite a skill.
Thank you. We were just talking about all kinds of depraved. You pulled out your cauterizing pen, you know, I can still smell it a little bit. I think you have that. I think you have that skill too.
Thank you.
We have that in common.
Thank you.
Okay. So we're in a yurt. We're talking about chakras. But what I want to pivot to slightly right now is a subject that has come up in passing, or that we've, like, alighted on a few times over the years on this podcast. And several people have requested this topic, and some people have actually, like, offered to cover it and or, you know, to be the guest talking about it. And I've done something with this topic that I have done with almost no other topic that I can think of, which is that I have avoided it because it makes me uncomfortable. And there's not, just like there's not a lot of things that I can't make sound sexy with my voice, there are not a lot of things that make me uncomfortable in a way that I, sometimes something makes me uncomfortable, but that is usually, like, comes like coupled with or twinned with a desire to confront the discomfort, like an underlying urge towards facing fear, or thinking that like facing something that is scary or disturbing or unsettling will that's like where the good stuff is, right?
Totally.
But not with this topic. And would you like to tell the listeners what that topic is?
That topic is clowns.
This is really nice. It just occurred to me. This is like, this space to me is like aesthetically like the opposite of like what I associate with clowns, but also part of what we have been talking about is that like anybody can be turned into a clown, and that like clowns can manifest in lots of different ways. You just pulled out this cute toy that is clownish to you. Do you want to like pick it up, and because it will make a cute, can you describe this?
So it's been called by the makers a doo-doo doll. And it is a stuffed doll that was handmade, and it has a yarn mane.
Uh-huh.
And these two very kind of like sleepy, stony looking eyes with heavy lids.
Yes.
And the pupils are buttons, and its face is paisley. And it doesn't have limbs, but it has kind of like a tooth-like appearance to shape to its body.
It has like kind of like a jewel on the back there.
Yes. It has a jewel that is actually a button.
Oh, nice.
And the button has a flap that opens,
uh-huh.
and you can put things inside of it.
You sure can.
Yeah, possibly even teeth, or like a clown nose.
Yeah, or drugs.
Drugs.
Yeah.
Always drugs.
Seems, I don't know. It seems like maybe an obvious stash box. Yeah, it definitely is an unsettling little plushy creature to me. But you find it really cute.
I do. Is it unsettling to you?
A little bit.
Interesting. I guess because it has kind of like a creepy gaze.
Yeah.
And if it came to life, how would it move?
Oh, God. It's a good point.
And I enjoy entertaining these kind of fantasies.
I know that about you. Okay, so why don't you, we'll have my therapy session a little later. Can you tell me why you are into clowns? You're into clowns.
Yes. And I will speculate all kinds of I guess background reasons.
Yeah.
But mainly, I like clowns because I can make anybody into a clown.
Mm.
And there's this absurdity to the way clowns look. You know, they're over-exaggerated, you know, gesture faces that are painted on.
Yeah.
And then the trademark big red nose, mm-hmm. and how they are essentially humans. Underneath.
Yeah.
But their humanity is kind of masked.
Yes.
And you know, like I've
is
never...
this plushie a human underneath?
No, this isn't even a clown.
This is
a whole different thing.
Okay.
Do you want me to hide it?
No, it's okay. Not. No, I'm here to face my fear. I'm in this year to face my fear.
A little exposure therapy for me.
Exactly. No. What you're saying about the idea that like you have this being that is exaggerated and absurdist, but is definitely is discernibly human beneath all of that, and so you have this cognitive dissonance of like something that is both human but then seems sort of alien or like extra human or subhuman or
yeah,
something.
Like, I don't even know what the, you know, what the other side of that dichotomy is. It's human and then it's whatever, you know, what is that infinite field of possibilities that
Whoa.
That clowns exist in. So there's the idea that that clowns are supposed to be funny.
Right.
But a lot of them are not. And
true.
And so clowns in a way subvert their intended purpose.
Huh.
And also they straddle that line between humor and terror.
Yes.
And that is where I like to live.
So you find that sexy?
I think there's definitely something very cerebrally arousing. It doesn't like get me wet.
Yeah.
But I haven't really gone there in my mind as to how clowns are sexy to me. And I think that when I do allow myself to go there, it's going to be an interesting discovery.
Maybe it's going to happen right now.
It might.
Yeah. So if it's not, so clowns aren't necessarily erotic to you, but there is kink potential to playing, to clown play, to which almost seems like redundant, right? I mean, which like it's like play.
Yeah, clown play. And clowning. And yeah. And yeah, there's a lot of kink potential there, but no, it's not necessarily erotic to me. Even though the idea of having sex with a clown or being a clown that has sex with other people and pushes it into perversion of say a rape scene with me as the clown is extremely exciting, and it definitely is on my birthday wish list now as an experience I'd like to engage in.
I bet that can be arranged.
So many possibilities.
So it sounds like you do find it sexy.
I guess I do.
Yeah. You're literally describing the first fantasy that you went to is like, wait, so are you a clown switch? Like you, so you like dressing up people as clowns, or you like bringing the clown out in someone, right?
Yes. But yes, I would say I'm a clown switch where if I were faced with a clown, I would seek to kind of pervert the clown, if okay. that's possible.
Yeah.
By seeing if the clown would respond to sexual stimulus.
Uh-huh.
And I'm just imagining myself like tying a clown down to a chair and climbing on top of him and doing a little bit of like grinding to see how the clown would react. And if it's like the man that comes out, or if the clown stays in character, or, you know, the whole scenario of like this clown being at a kid's birthday party and then like kind of taking the clown behind the scenes and being like,
yeah, it's away from the
away
children.
From the children.
Yes.
Away
only
from
yes,
the children.
Yes.
And let me see your clown boner. You know, do you?
Dia, you know, I'm not a doctor, but I think that you think that clowns are sexy.
Okay. Maybe I do. And thank you for allowing me, giving me permission to explore this, you know, very taboo area of clown sex.
You are welcome. Maybe this is part of how I will face my fear, is by talking about your desire and pleasure and fantasy.
Yeah, well, what if you eroticize clowns? Would it take the fear out of them, or?
Okay, so I don't know. Like an hour ago, I was like talking about like, well, if I was in a position where like a bunch of clowns like cornered me and were going to like fuck with me, like I don't know how I'd react, and you like definitely squealed from the other room, so which does make me more it makes me more open to the idea, because I like you. So
you would entertain me on my birthday with some the possibility of being accosted by a group of clowns.
So on your birthday, do you want to be clown gangbanged, or do you want to like lead a posse of clowns gangbanging someone?
Yes.
that all of it.
I think
your birthday.
Those can exist simultaneously, right?
For sure. Yes. Okay. Let's collapse all the barriers.
So also clowns, you know, as far as background goes, I never had a birthday party with a clown.
Okay.
And I've thought about it a lot, and you know, my mom wasn't she wasn't really into that idea. I don't even know if it was a possibility because we were poor, but also, you know, you have to pay clowns.
You sure do. Yeah.
but yeah, it was something that I thought would have been really fun.
Mm.
So possibly that, you know, lack of clown in my life makes me just want to always be drawn to them.
That makes sense.
And historically, clowns have an interesting story as the person who entertains, like, the court.
Right, right, and, like a jester.
Yes, like a jester. And if he didn't do a good job, he was thrown out the window or fired or fed to the lions.
Or thrown in the dungeon.
Yeah, and so, you know, these people, these entertainers, had their lives at stake.
Right. Yeah, you have to make people laugh, like your life literally depends on it.
Yeah, and so it was also a job to make the king laugh.
Right.
And I think that some clowns were given permission to actually make fun of the king.
Right, right. That's interesting. Yeah.
And so that, you know, of course, that was not normally allowed.
No, like punishable by death.
Right.
But probably it was like recognized on some level. They're like the original like satirists, right?
Yeah.
Like the idea that there is like a social function to exposing corrupt. You know, I mean, if the clown is allowed to say the thing that the unsayable, then probably they're going to talk about how the king is fat or the emperor has no clothes or like the, you know, the king is super corrupt and like all the peasants are like tired of shoveling shit, like, and they're going to, I don't even know, like, what, you know.
He would have to have some insider information.
Or, like, you know, the queen's a slut or whatever. Absolutely. It is. Like, yeah, either insider information or, yeah, I mean, I guess in a way that they would be, like, speaking the truth.
Mm-hmm. The truth that nobody else is allowed to speak.
Yeah.
And so it's a high-stakes job.
Sure.
To be a jester or a clown. Subject to death or humiliation. And that's another really interesting facet of clowning and clowns that I find is that as a clown, you're essentially putting yourself in a humiliating position to begin with.
Yeah, and it's just like pushing the limits of humiliation too, because everything is extra and everything is bold. So it's not just that you're wearing an absurd outfit. You're also doing absurd things and speaking in an absurd voice and engaging with people in an absurd way.
Yes. And hopefully making them laugh, but also coming at it with a sense of wonder and curiosity, where you were discussing earlier, like the things that we take for granted, for example, like a banana. Which in and of itself maybe is a funny thing, but it's a piece of fruit. It's,
sure.
It's got a practical purpose.
Yeah, all that potassium.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And also to whiten your teeth and to help with mosquito bites, from what I hear.
Mm-hmm.
This
also looks like a cock.
Yes, it is very insertable. which I have definitely implemented in clown play. But
I believe you.
They can take this object that we all kind of take for granted as like, oh, it's a banana, you eat it.
Right.
And come at it with a sense of wonder that allows us to even reexamine it as, well, what, you know, what exactly is a banana?
What is the banana-ness of the banana?
The banana-ness, right. And so we don't see it as the thing that we always see it as. We see it from a slightly different perspective of curiosity and wonder, because clearly it's always going to be this thing until somebody sheds a different light on it. And so in a lot of ways, clowns kind of shed a different perspective or allow for different perspectives to come up, where curiosity and wonder are kind of the source.
So here's the thing that is so funny about all of this is that is like all my shit. I am like totally down with all of that. I'm down with satire. I'm down with wonder. But clowns really fucking freak me out, man. But we'll come back to me. So, you know, taking your banana example and bringing it into a sexy imagination space. If you bring a clown's like the theater discipline of clowning, right? Like if you bring clowning into the bedroom.
Okay.
Right? And like if you are like interacting with your partner's body in a clowning way, mm-hmm. That could be hitting them in the face with a key lime pie.
Oh.
As I have done, and talked about in books and on this podcast, I'm sure. You know, or like honk noses, or, you know, do lots of like very childish things. But also if you think about the idea of wonder and curiosity and discovery, like think about approaching your partner's body with just like total wonder, mm-hmm. and like picking up parts of them or like combing or touching parts of them in a way that is outside of your routine or outside of your normal modes of engagement, or even like approaching someone's ass or their tits or their genitals or their holes or their face or the back of their neck or their hair or their feet, like any part of them, with just like, what could this do, mm-hmm. if I do this to this thing? Like if I like stroke it, if I touch it, if I like touch it in this really funny, weird tapping way, if I like, what happens if I slap it? What happens if I smash it? What happens if I like take this object and like connect it with the body in this way that, yes. is like not the way that you are like supposed to connect.
Or I wonder if this part stretches and touches this other part, and yeah,
exactly.
I think that application,
sounds nice.
That application of the, you know, the usefulness of clowns is definitely a kind of play that I really enjoy, both in the bedroom and also in the professional setting.
Yeah.
Because it does allow somebody to kind of be with me and maybe enjoy kind of the wonder that I'm experiencing of their body as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's that, and then there's also kind of the how can I push this clown into the realm of even beyond clowning, where
beyond clowning.
Yeah, I mean, is there such a thing as beyond clowning though? I wonder.
I think there is now.
I mean, okay, so for
what
example,
what is beyond? Yeah, give us an example of what is beyond clowning.
Like if I wanted this clown to dance and I just said dance, the person would be dancing.
Interesting.
Right? So because they haven't had formal clown training. So what I'll do is a lot of times I'll strap some electrodes onto the certain parts of their body.
Makes sense to me.
Or use like pulley tension to kind of, you know, create movement like a marionette that's that's strapped in some very strange ways. And that will change their movements, of course, and it becomes more clown-like, or there's an element of suffering that I think is also conducive to clowning that utilizes pathos.
Totally, because clowns sometimes are just like funny, but then there's sad clowns.
I love sad clowns.
I believe you. You're gonna like pull back the curtain of this year and there's just like giant velvet crying clown murals. No.
Oh, be still. Be still, my heart.
Well, I'll, yeah, noted. I'm sure we can find that somewhere. So you love a sad clown. What do you love? What's sexy about sad clowns?
Well, I do have a fetish for tears.
Okay.
I really enjoy breaking people down to the point of tears, whether it be overwhelming them or really digging deep and penetrating their shield or whatever. We're
pushing their shame buttons.
Pushing their shame buttons, which is the facet of humiliation and really, you know, taking it to the level of not just dressing up the person like a clown, but breaking down their ego so that their identity is so, you know, less than and so laughable and so disposable that there's, you know, they don't even know who they are anymore.
Okay, two things. One, I want to talk about identity and like the like erasure of identity. But I also want to talk about humiliation. Because I think, like, if I was really going to, like, be totally vulnerable and honest about why clowns freak me out, or why the idea of, like, a clown in a dungeon, or, like, being at a clown orgy, or being at your clown birthday party, is unsettling to me, is that, I'm interested in humiliation play. I'm interested in humiliation. I'm interested in like a lot of that kind of like psychological play, both as a top and as a bottom. But part of the reason that I like it is that I am aware and have been aware since I was very young that I have, for whatever reason, maybe you can hypnotize it out of me, like a much higher or wider or deeper threshold for humiliation than the average person. Like there are a lot of things that people find humiliating that I don't find humiliating. Like getting fucked in the ass, for example, right? Like you've experienced it, I've experienced it. It's all around us in the world all the time in what kinds of things people fear are emasculating, right? Like for many, many people, like the idea of like getting fucked in the ass is like the deepest humiliation and the deepest, that's like where the shame button is at.
Sure.
The prostate.
Inside, yeah.
Right. Or whether you have a prostate or not. But so the, just as one example, or nudity, right? Like, so for many people, nudity is like, an extreme form of humiliation, like being like made to parade naked in front, being just naked in front of a stranger. Yeah. I mean, like, you know, if you have a session, somebody walks in and the first thing that you make them do is take off all their clothes. Like,
yes.
Don't rush past that. Like, you know, that's like incredible. That's like an incredible taboo play, like just to start with, right?
Being so exposed and vulnerable. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's one thing to do it in the dungeon, but also there are like a lot of people who like don't want to go skinny dipping or don't want to like change in front of you. Anyway, so I'm like just, you know, to not like talk too much about humiliation, but like those things are like not inherently humiliating to me, right?
Okay.
So part of why I like playing with them is that it makes me like feel really powerful, either because I'm doing something to somebody that like wouldn't, that I'm like, meh, whatever, but like I can see how extreme it is for somebody else to do it.
Yeah.
And that makes me feel like this ain't shit to me, but it's like so much to you. Yeah. And I'm just gonna like rub your face in it. Or if like somebody is like putting me through a test of endurance and they're like, well, take off all your clothes, and I'm like, is that all you got, you know? Mm-hmm. Like so that's like part of why I like playing with it. But the idea of doing things that are just like embarrassing. I want to be more specific, like doing things that are like clownish, that are just like so silly and almost even like tacky or like tasteless and like clumsy.
Yeah. And purposefully like slapstick and goofy, and
that actually laughable. Makes yeah, exactly, like that, or like even just like the idea of like people pointing at me and being like haha, you know, that is actually unnerving and scary to me. And so I guess part of the reason that I guess it's like, and so this is why having this conversation about like, well, what would it take for me to like be a part of a clown scene actually like pushes me to a place of like past the threshold of just, oh yeah, I'm into all this like really sick and twisted shit, but it's like actually relatively like not that sick and twisted to me. It's actually like my comfort zone. Mm. Like this is actually outside my comfort zone.
Yeah. Which the idea is, which is clowning, a pretty large space.
Exactly. Your comfort zone. Yeah. It's so, like, it's like you're like traveling like to the ends of the earth to like find my comfort zone, to find the edges of my comfort zone.
I wonder if there's a role of shame in there.
Yeah.
And I wonder if the idea of being laughed at,
or being, I guess it's like being uncool.
Uh-huh.
Like ultimately, like I can definitely get fucked in the ass and be cool. And I can definitely be like naked in front of a bunch of strangers and be really cool.
But
and
can
like
you be a clown and be cool?
I don't think so.
There's gotta be a way.
Well, but I think maybe, okay, so like there would be two approaches, right? One would be making me a clown, but making me cool so I can take the security blanket of my like sunglasses, you know, like into clowning. Like
is that the symbol for cool? Is your sunglasses?
It's the emoji for cool.
So what does a cool clown look like?
But wait. So but the thing that would be really edge play would be putting me in a position where I have no access to my coolness. And I'm like totally exposed and as the uncool person that I fear that I am.
And everybody else is wearing sunglasses.
And everybody knows.
Right.
Everybody knows. Or they don't even have to wear sunglasses. They're just that cool.
And you're the clown.
I'm just the one who's, I'm like, the clown, like the class clown or the village idiot or whatever.
So you don't ever willingly put yourself in that position of being kind of I don't want to say laughing stock necessarily, but just the entertainer.
I mean, definitely put myself in the position of being the entertainer, but it always has. And I'm, you know, I'm a humorist for sure. Mm-hmm. I love making people laugh, but like, what are, you know, there's like two kinds of, like Shakespearean archetypical clowns, right? There's like the fool. And then there's like, I don't know what it's called, but then there's like sort of like the clever comic relief person, right?
I guess more like the trickster.
Right. Like the mischief maker, like the person who's like always one step ahead of everybody, the like Loki or something like that, right? The fox.
Right. The Reynard.
Yes.
But also I think that there's the slapstick caricature of clowns too that, you know, I guess is more closely associated with the word clown too.
But just to touch on Shakespeare one more time, and this is obviously like a literary archetype in like a lot of different ways, right? Like you have the person who's the comic relief who has the power over everyone, right? And then you have the person who's the comic relief where like is welcoming all of the jokes being at their expense. And I guess like that is the thing that terrifies me is like, and also that person is like not aware, well maybe, but in general the idea is that they like are not aware that they're being funny and everyone is laughing at them and they're like, what, I'm just being me,
right? I know what you mean.
Yeah.
And they're, it's not necessarily deliberate or intentional, and they, you know, kind of, but maybe they accept that role of being kind of pathetic.
Yeah, so it's like, yeah, anyway. So there's that. I don't know. What do you make of that?
I don't know how to fully process all this like theoretical clown information right now.
Does it make you, okay, let me put it to you in these terms. Does this conversation make you want to like ease me into clown play, or does it bring out like the sadist in you where you want to like push me past my comfort zone?
Very easy to answer that one. I would definitely want to stick a bunch of clowns on you and see what happens. See how fast you can run or how loud you can scream. It brings out the sadist in me.
That's lovely. That does make me smile. You know, but that's interesting too, because, right, so like we're talking about like several different incarnations of this like eroticism and this terror and this humor, right? So there's the idea of me being transformed into a clown.
Right.
And like being seen either by you or by an audience or by people, right? Like as the pathetic is a good word, right? Mm-hmm. That is definitely like an edgy, scary word for me. Mm-hmm. Pathetic creature. But then there's the idea of like being chased or abducted by or cornered by or like held captive by or tortured by or fucked by mm-hmm. a gang mm-hmm. of clowns.
Clowns are all over my psyche. They're just running rampant in there doing all the things to each other. And so
oh, clown on clown.
Yeah, why not?
And well, that's it's definitely like an interesting dynamic, like a clown like interacting like in a kinky or erotic way, like with a non-clown versus right. like clowns interacting with one another. Those are different dynamics.
Exactly. And I think that the clown on clown might offer you a level of protection and also spectatorship where you can maybe enjoy the clown on clown action.
Yeah.
And because they're not after you.
I mean, a really scary thing is the idea of like clowns being after me and then transforming me into a clown against my will.
Infecting you with clownhood.
That's right.
Interesting. That could make a really great porn.
True. True.
Where they fuck you and then you become a clown.
Oh, God. That is a very monstrous thing, right? I mean, we were talking about monsters earlier, and, you know, of course, there's, like, you know, the Stephen King book that has been made into a couple of movies, It, you know, which has a clown that represents, like, the, like, deepest, like, fear that well it like represents like a like an ancient evil, and then it like manifests in like the thing that like children are scared of mm-hmm. and it like also represents like the corruption of adults anyway but
I bet the book is better.
Have you not read the book?
I haven't read the book. I've seen the films.
The book has one of the weirdest, most like like for no apparent reason group sex scene, which spoiler alert for a book that came out in the 80s, I
yes.
think. Yeah, which neither of the movies has like touched with a 10-foot pole, I but know. Like
such a missed opportunity.
Yeah, well, it would be very hard to film because it's children. True. It's like these like children. Like they've like already defeated the evil, but then like in order to find their way like out of the sewers, like the one girl in the group like offers herself to like all of her guy friends, and that's part of how she like works through her trauma of being like sexually abused. Oh. And like, you know, anyway, that's like a topic for another day, I guess.
Yes.
Yeah. You'll
have to save that and come back to it.
Yeah. I feel like there's two kinds of people in the world. People who are aware of that weird scene in the book, It, and people who are and people who aren't.
Only two kinds of people.
Yeah, exactly. But anyway, so yeah, so we were talking about the monstrous. Yeah. So, and like infection is, of course, like one of the major reoccurring themes of monstrosity, right? Whether it's zombies, mm-hmm. you know, that, you know, people sometimes talk about zombies being like a metaphor for being a virus, or like vampirism yes. has like been like a metaphor for the plague, or just the idea
or
that
addiction.
Like a exactly yeah. exactly, or the idea that like a certain kind of person, if you interact with a certain kind of person, whether it's a queer person or a loose woman or a person of color or someone from this country or mm-hmm. whatever, that or a disabled person, that like that person, that just by interacting with them you will be infected or transformed, like, or be like become one of them, or one with them.
One of them. One yeah, of the them. Idea of separation, I think, is also very strong with clowns.
Huh.
because you don't always identify with the clown in any relatable way. Most people do not.
Huh.
And to be seen as a clown is usually a social taboo.
Yeah.
Right? You know, nobody wants to be the clown. Or even the class clown isn't necessarily like the desirable position in class.
Totally.
But it's one that somebody chooses, so they kind of choose that more powerful position of being the trickster, rather.
Well, yeah, that's so interesting. The idea of like being a class clown, of getting like social cachet from being the class clown, is kind of like buying into your own humiliation and being like, I am gonna like humiliate myself all the time for your amusement because it's better than not having a role, like a social role. Mm-hmm. It's like better to be defined or you like have more power or agency
when you're seen as something.
Yeah, even if it's
rather than nothing.
Yes.
Clowns definitely not nothing.
Clowns are definitely not nothing.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, why are people into that, fans? Did you know that the flagship Pleasure Chest store in the West Village was featured on an infamous episode of Sex in the City? Yes, that's right. It's the place where the ladies went shopping for a rabbit vibrator. And frankly, it changed the pop culture conversation around sex toys forever. And that's why on Thursday, July 26th, that very same West Village location on 7th Avenue in Manhattan is hosting a Sex in the City 20th anniversary party. It's from 7 to 9 p.m. and it is totally free. The sex specialists will introduce you to the original dual action toy that helped Charlotte come for like 5 minutes and also fill you in on all the innovations in rabbit technology since. Whether you're a Carrie, or a Charlotte, or a Miranda, a Samantha, or even a Mr. Big, come celebrate 20 years of rabbit vibrator fame at the Pleasure Chest. So I've never liked clowns, and I was aware of it from a very young age. And then there was this thing when I was a teenager in the 90s, where there was like a little bit of sort of like social acknowledgement of clowns being creepy, and I like definitely remember it at Hot Topic. Do you remember Hot Topic?
Oh yes.
there were like buttons that said "Can't sleep, clowns will eat me." Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah.
And I felt a little like validated by that because I was like, I had just always kind of been like been a thing in my head, and I was like, oh, somebody else also is acknowledging that like this is kind of weird.
And those were usually right next to the Insane Clown Posse T-shirts, right?
We should talk about Insane Clown Posse for sure in terms of belonging, like that you would, that, yeah, that people would be interested in. What are they called? They're called juggalos, right? That
juggalos,
you like want to
yeah.
be part of a community of like extreme freaks.
Yeah. And embracing that aspect of, it could be anything, but you know, maybe the dark and ridiculous, overtone of your own socioeconomic bracket.
Yeah, like being working class, which many juggalos are,
right,
in America. Yeah. I'm so interested in the like association between darkness and the ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
or like the hilarity and terror. You keep sort of talking about like those two kinds of things as like being connected. And they clearly are through clowns.
Yeah.
But it's kind of like mysterious to me why those things are connected.
There aren't that many other things that connect terror and humor.
Yeah.
I mean.
Or darkness and ridiculousness.
Right. And maybe there are, but I think clowns are probably the most obvious and prevalent symbol. And potent, potent. And to me, terror is a very authentic place to be.
You know what is so great about audio is that I know that some people will have like discerned that you definitely broke into a smile the second that you said the word terror. Anyway, go on. Because I could hear it in your voice. I can see it with my eyes, but you definitely smiled as soon as you said terror. Like, smiled like you were talking about, like, a child that you love.
I know. It's so perverse. And I have the privilege of being in, from a rather stable enough upbringing where I did not regularly experience terror. And so I can talk about it with a sense of lightness, but there definitely are people that have been traumatized and terrorized repeatedly, whereas become a part of their being.
Yeah.
And they're not looking to experience that in any lighthearted way. They're trying to avoid it.
But some folks, but also like the inverse of both of the things that you just said are true. Like sometimes folks who haven't experienced a great deal of terror and trauma aren't attracted to it, and sometimes people who have experienced that are attracted to it within the things that we were talking about in the beginning of this conversation of, you know, of like the potential healing or even just straight up like catharsis or sense of control that can come from
totally
playing with that.
And it's important to acknowledge all the quadrants of terror and trauma.
Yes. And ridiculousness.
So it's like I said earlier, it's like straddling the line between these two feelings or states of being, and they aren't normally associated with each other.
Yeah.
And so I find that to be a kind of an interesting place to be, because what in your normal life brings you those to those places? Usually it's just one feeling or the other, but so easily one can become the other.
That's true.
And then back again.
I guess they are spaces of vulnerability, and that's what makes them connected. Like when you are vulnerable in whatever way that means, emotionally, physically, etc., you could be playing with like humor or the ridiculousness, and then it could slide into hurt.
Very easily.
Very easily.
When it comes to clowns. When you have somebody in front of you dressed in like a big stripy suit with a ruff, and you know, the you know what's funny? I just realized that Ronald McDonald, the symbol for fast food and
is a clown.
Is a clown. And and he's kind of the only clown, but definitely the most popular one.
Probably the most instantly globally recognizable clown of the past 100 years.
Yeah, and what does that even mean to have this fast food company use the symbol of terror?
Whoa. Whoa.
and humor.
Totally.
But not exclusively humor.
Yeah. Whoa. I wonder if there are people with erotic fantasies about all of the McDonald's characters. I'm like now realizing that I can like think of that there, because there's the Hamburglar.
Who is clownish. More like a mime, actually.
Yes. Yes.
But
and then there's
Grimace,
the who, big purple.
Yes, very Barney-like.
Yes. And isn't there like a late sexy lady fry? Is there like a lady fry?
I don't recall.
Fry guy?
A
no.
Female. Fry guys. Fry guys are little, you know, there's like maybe three of them.
Is that a McDonald's thing?
I think they're non-binary. Pretty sure.
Amazing. Amazing.
Well, they're called guys, but that's just
guys. You know, it's like it could
saying
be...
it's like saying y'all.
Yeah. Whoa. Yeah, it is interesting. You know what? I can't even go there.
A whole other topic for a whole other show.
For sure. Okay, let's talk about masks. So, okay,
yeah.
So I don't like them. I don't like masks. And this is when I started sort of like analyzing myself, as I want to do, about my aversion to clowns, which is like deep and guttural and visceral and real in a way that not, frankly, a lot of my fears are. I wouldn't quite call it a phobia. Like, I've got like, it's not like, like if I had to be like, if I like had to go to the circus, I would probably be like, ugh, I really don't like this, but I don't think I would like have a panic attack.
It's manageable.
It's manageable.
But not preferable.
That's exactly right. Manageable, but not preferable. Yeah. It's just I have a distaste for clowns.
And what do clowns taste like, Tina?
I don't know yet. I guess I'm going to find out. Grease paint? I don't know. Sorry, hamburgers? So I don't like masks. I don't like, face paint that like transforms the face. In a significant or like abject or like extreme way. Although, we could talk about like drag and, definitely the way that like drag queen culture has become like more abject in the past few years and less about like symmetry and grace and femininity and beauty. Yeah. But, we can talk about that. Sometimes absurdist drag queens do unsettle me, and sometimes they are like straight up like being clowns or clowning or clownish. Yes. I'm like into the fact that that is happening, but don't necessarily like need it like in my face. I really don't like masks. Like, please, masquerade masks. I cannot believe this is one of the like perennial like intro to sexy mystery culture things that like still goes on. It's in the 50 Shades movies. It like, you know, it's like, I understand, you know, it's like some Phantom of the Opera shit, you know, where it's like, I get that people want to engage with one another in a way where it's like freeing to them that their identity is obscured, and so they can be their true selves because they have a mask, because they're wearing a mask, right?
Yeah.
I get it. But the like whole like sort of flowery jester, there's the jester again, actually, but like this sort of like, I don't even know what the style is, but you know, the masquerade,
the
mask,
Harlequin?
Like Harlequin. Okay. Thank you. That like Harlequin look, I'm just like, please, this is so over.
Huh, okay.
Personally.
Yeah.
Do you like it? Do you like Harlequin masks?
I mean, I love all kinds of masks.
Okay.
I love the idea of obscuring my identity so that I don't have to perform my expected gender role, my expected, like ethnic role, my expected anything role. In fact, my
That's
preference,
really powerful.
I don't even know how you deal with Halloween, but my preference is usually for Halloween to dress up as some thing that's not female and not human.
Cool.
And so that I can just kind of like be whatever. And it's not like my true self. You know, there's a lot of true selves depending on what the context and what my feeling is, but it's a fun way to play with my own self and to bring out and emphasize parts that don't normally come into play in my like social roles.
I mean, that makes intellectual sense to me, and I can appreciate that historically virtually every culture has some sort of ritual or tradition or ceremony that has to do with masks, even if it's like a veil, right? Like unveiling the bride.
Totally.
Right. But I don't like it.
Okay, so you don't like you don't like seeing other people in masks.
That's right.
And do you, how do you feel about wearing them?
I don't like that either.
Okay.
Yeah, I have nothing to hide. I don't know. I say that jokingly. I understand that that wearing a mask is not about hiding per se, or like not necessarily in a bad way. Yeah, but you know, even like people in like anthropomorphic animal costumes, like at theme parks, or like mascots, like those have always freaked me out. I did not like them as a child. I did not want my fucking picture taken with them. I was like, you know, even like walking around Times Square is like unsettling to me, because there's like Iron Man and Elmo and like all these people, right?
Iron Man and Elmo.
You know?
So I think that the idea of not being able to connect with somebody visually, like being able to see their eyes and their expressions,
yeah,
allows you to kind of like go into an area where everything about them is unknown.
Yeah.
Their humanity, their intentions.
Yeah.
They could even be not even human.
Yeah, they definitely could.
Yeah, and there's a lot of possibilities hiding behind a mask.
Yeah.
And for me, like that kind of possibility is fun to play with.
Yeah.
Where I feel like if I'm wearing the mask, I feel in control of the possibility, and being a trickster is definitely one of them.
Yeah.
But also kind of disconnecting from everything in a way where I can just kind of like be an object. And to me, as a pro dom, being able to put a sub in a mask or a hood or, you know, whatever, like full head thing, and not have to relate to them as the way that I've always related to them through communications and email or just whatever,
you know, or even just the fact that it's a man or a white man.
Exactly. Like I don't judge this being quite as much when they're wearing a mask. They're more like an object for me to play with.
Yeah, well, just like, and so my like originally, you know, as you can imagine, having an aversion to masks and things that like annihilate your identity is like really rough when you are like getting your start as a dominatrix, because there's like a lot of that going on, right? And even a blindfold, right? But as with many sexual things, like I definitely was not like attracted to hoods, like full head encasing hoods, and you know, even things like the GIMP in Pulp Fiction definitely like you know, unsettled me when I first saw that movie. And like, but then the first time that somebody came in, like that a client came in and said, I really want you to put this leather hood on me, and I was like, oh, okay, you know, and I like put the hood on him and like laced up the back and then unzipped the mouth zipper and was able to discover in this leather encased ball that was now my thing to play with, this wet, warm red hole that I could just stick my fingers in and just play with. That it sort of respond, you would touch it and it would sort of have some give and response, like that was like, okay, I get it.
Oh, okay, good.
Like, and then, you know, like then you stick your dick in it and fuck it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily a human that you're performing a sex act with. It
yeah.
is just a thing of curiosity.
It really comes back to the clown thing of like, what is this hole?
Uh-huh.
What is it? How does it respond when I touch it like this?
Oh, so you, in a way, you kind of projected the clown, or you absorbed the clown vibe was kind of like being explored in both ways.
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting that like he was wearing the identity obscuring tool,
right? But you were the one
that coming. It brought out my curiosity and wonder and transform. I mean, I'm sure, I'm positive that I am capable of interacting with a skull and like the mouth in the skull in a way that is objectifying, when I can also like look into that person's eyes or like touch their skin, as opposed to like seeing them as this like leather thing. But it does like do a little number on your brain.
Sure, yeah, it does. It creates a sense of removal from the intimacy of the interaction, and it and that sense of being detached from the human interaction with this person allows you more freedom.
Yeah.
And curiosity.
And it allows them the freedom to really feel like every touch is a touch of objectification. Like I could see like wearing the hood, like when someone's interacting with you, you can get into that place where you have faith that they really don't see you as human.
Exactly. And sometimes that's a relief.
Yeah.
You know, to not be asked, oh, how are you and your and your kids? And, you know, like to have to think about those things that are definably human in your experience, and to just kind of be treated like none of these things are really important right now. What's important is that you can be a surface for my feet.
Yeah. That's so nice.
It is. It's a nice escape, I think, from some people that are maybe overwrought with human interaction.
Yeah. Okay, Dia. Well, I'm not sure if I would say that I have totally gotten to the deepest psychological depths of my understanding of my clown aversion, but I do feel like I've learned a lot about clowns and myself.
Yes, and that is always what we could hope for in talking about things. And I've learned a lot about myself too, and
cool.
The idea of, you know, exploring the eroticization of clowns. And
it sounds like you definitely want to sit on a clown's dick.
If it's, well, it's got to be a good dick, you know.
That's your prerogative.
If it's like some tiny gherkin, probably not.
No. Then you'll just humiliate.
Exactly. And that's just as fun to me. And it's just as thrilling, just as engaging, just as amusing.
You are a true pervert. And I really like that about you. You're like, I could fuck it, but I can also
make fun. I can flick it.
Dia, if people are delighted by you as I imagine they are, where can they find you on the internet?
On the internet, I have a website, and that is dominadynasty.com. I also have social media in the form of Twitter, and that is also Domina Dynasty. And then on Instagram, I am Dia_Dynasty.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe those are the only places that I exist on the internet.
What about La Maison de Rouge?
La Maison de Rouge is lamaisonderouge.com as a form of website. And then La Maison de Rouge, which is LAMAISONDUROUGE. And that's basically our name across all platforms. So Twitter, Instagram, Tumblr, and as a .com.
Cool. Well, I definitely recommend people check those things out. You guys do a Periscope on Twitter every Monday, right?
Every Monday.
Yeah, you interview, sort of like this, you interview pro doms and other perverts, and yes, it's a live broadcast, and you can interact wherever you are and able to receive the internet.
And there are times when we even take a break from interviews to explore fun fetishes.
Cool.
We've had fun little foot fetish explorations as well as food fetishes. And I believe we're going to keep continuing the series of fetishes that are less sexually graphic and more amusing and maybe obscure.
Cool. I obviously love that. Well, thank you for bringing me into your yurt.
Thank you for coming to my yurt. Into my circus tent.
Oh, shit. It's so, oh my God, if this sort of like English safari tent just fell away, and then behind it, it was like,
and the clowns start coming in, and there's a little clown car, and there's about 20 clowns on their way.
I don't know, man. I don't know. Part of it makes me excited that it would be really scary. I think also if I knew that all of the clowns were people that I liked,
infected.
If they were like zombie clowns.
Yeah. Like they were people that you liked, that you recognize as people that you liked, but they were definitely not acting like people that you remember them being.
That is the other thing about the infection monstrosity thing, right? Like whether it's a vampire or a zombie, or there's like lots of other examples, like the idea, it's like you're looking at the person and it's the person that you know that you think you know what to expect from them, you think you have a certain kind of relationship, love, intimacy, whatever, but they are not behaving like that person. Maybe they are actually, it's like that person's body, but it's not that person anymore, it's a demon now, or they like have no mind, they're just reanimated, whatever.
All possibilities with the clown.
I did have an experience in when I was in Vegas this year to cover the AVNs for Rolling Stone, where I was like trying to like go to some parties, but I had to like keep my stamina up because I was there as a reporter, not just like as a partying porn star. But like all my friends, the partying porn stars, like that's like what they do. So there was just like all this like incredible endurance. And like on the last night, my friends, Bella Bathory and Michael Vegas and Susie Q and a bunch of other folks were having a clown orgy, in Bella's room. And it was like a really elegant and decadent room. And they were just like, I just know, like those people are freaks. So I like knew they were really going to bring it. I knew it wasn't going to be a like sort of clown orgy. I knew there was going to be a lot of like
authentic clowning
and just like intensity.
Oh yeah.
And like I knew that I would like try to maybe like talk to someone and they would just be like, I'm a clown. And I was like 3 a.m and I was just like, I can't do it. Like I can't. Everybody was like, let's go to the clown orgy. I was like, I want to go party with my friends and I want to party like a porn star in Vegas. And I want to go to an orgy, but I can't. I can handle all that stimulation, but I can't handle like the extra level of stimulation that is the clowning.
Yeah.
So I missed out, apparently. Well,
yeah, I mean, it's, you know, our defenses are definitely lowered in the late night or especially early hours in Vegas. Of the morning. And what if they weren't acting like your friends?
Yeah, that is scary. The thing you kind of want from your friends at an orgy is for them to act like your friends. Maybe that's just me. Like, that's again, I can take this to my therapist.
The idea of a psychological safe space just doesn't exist with clowns.
That is a beautiful note to end on. Dia, thank you so much.
It was my pleasure. This exploration into clowning and clownhood and theoretical frameworks of why clowns are is just so compelling. I could talk about this for hours, so thank you.
You're so welcome.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.